Hello and welcome to the Crypto Explorer. It's a podcast by Sygnum Bank designed to bring you closer to the world of crypto and to the future of finance. I'm your host, Alia Dasgupta, and today I'm really excited to be joined in our studio by Charles-Henri Monchot, who is the Chief Investment Officer in SITS Bank based in Geneva, before a career spanning all of the TradFi world across Deutsche Bank, Lombard Odier, the Dubai Investments, BNP Paribas. He will tell us more about it. And Fabian Dori, who is the head of asset management here at Sygnum Bank and is also deputy CEO and a member of the group executive board. Thank you both so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you.
It's a complicated time in the market, but also a really interesting time to look at value opportunities and how to integrate these into our asset management portfolios. So before we really get into the meat of what we're here to talk about, maybe we can do a quick round of introductions. And Charles-Henri, would you like to start?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for the invite. So indeed, I'm coming from the, let's say, traditional world. So I've been in finance for 25 years, initially running funds and discretionary mandate, you know, first in fixed income, equities, then alternative investments. I was also involved into equity research, mainly on the IT side. I will come back on that. And then I moved to a more generalist role, so as CIOs at different places, you know, as you mentioned before. So that's my background. So again, 25 years in financial industry, currently overlooking the investment departments at Banque Cise, which is a boutique Swiss private bank with 27 billion Swiss franc in assets under management, and which recently, by the way, announced, let's say, the new offering on the digital asset side with custodying digital asset and also offering execution-only trading capabilities to our clients.
Perfect. So great to have you on, Charles-Henri. And Fabian, can you give us the background story and how did you end up in crypto?
Happy to share that. No, thanks. And similar to Charles-Henri, also spent most of my professional career on the traditional finance side, always at the interface between investment management and technology with various institutions here in Switzerland. When it comes to crypto, I would say in terms of, for Sygnum terms, I probably more a late joiner. I got interested in 2017. During the bull run, but then looked at it with quite some skepticism and only started to do real research on my own early 2018 and then had the chance, so to say, to get in the market when prices came down. While I was at the same time, of course, investigating what Sygnum is all about, what the strategy would be, what it aims for. And that was then actually the reason for me to really go down the rabbit hole. And the more I digged, similar to many others, the more fascinated I got. And finally ended up not only in crypto, but also at Sygnum.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that background, Fabian. And so now maybe we can dig into it a little bit, right? Maybe both of you, because you originally had your background in the traditional finance space, when did you, or how do you really think crypto should be a part of an asset management portfolio? And maybe Charles-Henri, you want to start?
Yeah, first, as a background, so because, you know, I at some point of my career, I was looking at the tech sector. So the tech sector, if you want to be a good, let's say, research analyst, you want to be a good investor into tech, you should not focus on, let's say, on the kind of legacy names. You need always to find, let's say, the newcomer, you know, the disruptor. I came across Bitcoin, it was around 2014, 2015. So first there was a small ATM, Bitcoin ATM in Geneva. And my wife and myself, you know, we bought a very small, you know, tiny amounts to get our first Bitcoin. And then, you know, I started to kind of, let's say, rise in value. I started to read books about it and all about the genesis, you know, of what is behind Bitcoin. So my first interest was, you know, looking at Bitcoin. And then as, you know, things were progressing, I always thought about this white paper as being, you know, almost something like Nostradamus, because they were talking about decentralization, about the fact that, you know, basically, fiat currencies were going through monetary debasement with, you know, quantitative easing really, let's say, affecting the reliability of fiat currency. And then I told myself, well, that looks like maybe the digital gold story is getting traction. So that was, let's say, my first interest was really on the main one, which is Bitcoin. And then I started to look at Ethereum and the new, let's say, protocols coming. And this is how, you know, I look at cryptocurrencies as indeed an asset class with basically two camps. One, which is, again, Bitcoin, that's, you know, I personally value as kind of digital gold. And as you know, gold has a role to play into global assets, global portfolios. And for the rest, it's more like, let's say, I see Ethereum and all of the other protocols as super liquid venture capital investments. So you need to, you know, you have this, you face the same kind of risk than VC. In other words, you can lose everything. But if you, let's say, identify the right one, you can really, let's say, make 5, 10, 20, 100x on your investment. So that's the way I see them. And then the third wave will be something which is also very interesting, tokenization, where indeed, you know, it will make it easier to expose our clients to some illiquid asset classes. And, you know, this is how indeed these tokenized assets will be able to find their way into global multi-asset portfolios. So it's true, it's the very early innings, would be for Bitcoin or cryptos. You know, volatility is very high, so that makes it very difficult to allocate any amount or even a small accounts, small amounts, based on the volatility budget. But as things, let's say, start to mature and normalize, this indeed could be, you know, interesting asset class to consider, with, again, you know, digital gold being a kind of diversifier, so Bitcoin as a diversifier. And for the rest, you know, it's like either microcap tech stocks or liquid VCs could be the way, you know, to find a place for them into a multi-asset portfolio.
Super interesting. I like that way of diversifying it. I don't know, Fabian, do you see it the same way, or what's your view?
No, very similar to that. Yes. First of all, I think we need to keep in mind that crypto assets are still a very young asset class, still very much volatile and linked to many risks. So investors in that asset class need to have a certain risk appetite, certain risk tolerance. But if that is given, I think crypto assets make very much sense. I personally like it, so to say, along three lines of reasoning. First of all, I truly believe in the mega trend of the blockchain DLT technology per se, right? Maybe similar to the adoption of what we have seen when it comes to personal computers, the internet, and so on. So a technological advancement. Second, then it provides, to what extent and whether that really gets through or not needs to be seen, but still it provides alternatives when it comes to store of value, medium of exchange, all of those use cases, which I think are interesting. And last but not least, of course, so to say, the business innovation which is enabled by it and then can be seen through new forms of applications, new forms of platforms, be that decentralized finance, being it maybe less finance-oriented, such as metaverse, gaming, whatever. So also from that perspective. So I think there are different dimensions which give value and an increasing amount of value to that technology which is emerging.
Super. I see how both of you are talking about this also from quite a risk-on perspective, right? Like you're saying that, I mean, like even as Charles already said, there's the value in the megatrend and the considering Bitcoin as an alternative to gold, but then also being open to the volatility and being open to the kind of risk that also comes from digital assets. Maybe I can also ask, how has your view evolved, particularly at the end of this year? Like, we've seen quite a turbulent year in 2022. We've seen, you know, multiple big players crumble and implode. And I think the reputation of the crypto space is definitely more risk-on than it was. But personally, or like, how has your view perhaps changed in this time or today, let's say? Maybe Fabian, you want to take it first?
Well, actually, I think the there's a paradox about the year 2022. On the one hand, it has been a very confirmation of the case for crypto itself, right? Because most of the issues that we had with centralized players such as FTX, maybe Binance, but also then, of course, Celsius and the likes, this has been all about problems with centralized institutions, not about the technology, not about the protocols, etc. By contrast, they actually were confirmed in terms of they were able to deal with and scope, deal with the volume, deal with the volatility and so on. So the technology played out. Plus, I think it again became evident that it can pay off to have really trustless technology, decentralized governance, transparency, and the transparency, etc. So in that sense, it has been a very much a confirmation of the case per se. But of course, what I wouldn't have expected to that extent is the fraud and the issues that we had with the centralized finance players. What I think has also been, again, a confirmation is, of course, that the technology is still young, right? Many things are exploratory. And in that sense, the fallout of Terra Luna was a shock, but I think a shock in the sense of we know that such things might happen because of the fact that this technology is new. There is exploratory tasks, exploratory innovation, which might fail, which might work out. So in that sense, that was within the rails of what I would expect for such a technology which is maturing. But what I was also, I think, what also is a learning for me personally is that the complexity of the ecosystem is increasing significantly, right? We have seen it in terms of leverage cascade, in terms of interdependencies and so on. So it's extremely important to pay attention to that complexity of the ecosystem itself and how it's interlinked and so on in order again to do proper risk management. Overall, I would say it has been a confirmation. In that sense, my long-term view hasn't changed. And as bad as volatility is, I'm also grateful for the depressed price levels personally in order to have the chance to build out my portfolio further at attractive levels. So.
Interesting. And Charles Henry, what do you think?
Well, first, because we are in the midst of another crypto winter, mm-hmm. Crypto winter are part of the story. It's called capitalism. So there is a very strong, technology, which is called blockchain, which, you know, continue to work and expands and, you know, with the growing ecosystem, becoming more and more robust with more and more applications. But because, you know, to make it work, you need capital, you need to attract investor interest. It's always the same kind of cycle. So you have appreciation in prices, which attract, you know, a lot of interest, new projects, push the prices up. And then because there are too many coins and the prices are too high and something happens, the bubble bursts. And it's always like this. And without, let's say, crypto winters and all of the buzz and all of the price appreciation, capital will not come. So that's part of the story. Now, what we are facing now is a crypto winter, which is in two phases. I think the first stage was really the first half of the year with, repricing of all risk assets, bonds, equities, cryptos. They all got, reprice downwards because of, you know, the end of quantitative easing, basically. So I think, you know, Bitcoin and cryptos got hurt by that. And then the second stage where we are going currently through is really about something very specific to the industry because of, let's say, the scandals we have seen, you know, Luna, FTX, and currently we are going through a purge. And after this purge, we'll see, you know, who is, let's say, swimming with closes and those who are not. And then it would be very good for the industry. I think it's typical Darwinism mechanism where, you know, the survival of the fittest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was mentioning technology initially. This is what happened with the internet bubble, for instance. When it bursted, many of them disappeared, but those who survived, they became monster, you know, the fangs, for instance.
Yeah.
So we'll probably go through something like this with the cryptos. There will be many of them disappearing, but those who are going to stay, they might, let's say, grab a disproportionate share of the cake and become investable for even traditional investors. So I see this as a positive, say, development. It's painful for those who have cryptos, but it's probably going to, you know, make it better in the long run.
Absolutely. I think this is the cleansing, if you will, or a form of really weeding out the bad guys in a sea of like innovative new opportunities. But as we're both talking about, the one side is the technology risk, right? Like you talked about with Luna, Fabian. And on the other side, with the centralization of, you know, who's swimming without their shorts, like we saw with FTX and Alameda and stuff. But there are specific risks that also come up when we're talking about crypto. So one side, of course, is like smart contract risk or tech risk. But on the other hand, you also have like regulatory uncertainty. What sort of, let's say, checks and balances do you consider to be most important when you're looking at investing in this asset class? And maybe this one first to Charles Andre.
First, the way I see it is that, so I'm going to answer in two phases.
Sure.
The way I see it is that Bitcoin is the benchmark of the industry because it never went bust. It always worked as a technology. Yes, the prices is moving up and down, but at the end of the day, you know, it's really appreciated, you know, massively. And from a technological point of view, it's more robust than even, let's say, the US financial system. Even with 40% of the mining power moving from, let's say, China within, a few days, you know, it never went bust. So the technology itself is robust. The mechanism of, let's say, halving and so on has always been delivering. So that's, to me, as a, let's say, technology, if you believe that, let's say, supply will indeed be capped and that demand will grow, there is a case to be made. You just need to accept volatility. So that's, this one looks, let's say, okay-ish, you know, from that perspective. Again, you need to accept volatility. Then, for the rest, the issue is that because Bitcoin works, but have some, let's say, drawbacks. Many protocols try to improve Bitcoin, but going into areas which are just adding risk. So, you know, for instance, they want to make it cheaper, but at the cost of, let's say, less decentralization. Or they want to, let's say, make it more eco-friendly, but this also comes, let's say, with some drawbacks. So, and this is why you see so many protocols kind of, let's say, failing and disappearing because they want to copy. It's like if you want to copy the iPhone, okay, you want to make it, let's say, cheaper, for instance, but that might be at the cost of, let's say, reliability. So that's the first thing, is that when you venture outside of Bitcoin, you need to make sure that, you know, anything which is different will be, let's say, the mining process, you know, or the technology do not come with, let's say, major flows. Okay, then when it comes to, for if we take, you know, FTX and, let's say, other disaster, I think there is something which seems to be clear, is that either you are non-regulated but you are truly decentralized, or you are centralized but you need to be regulated. So Coinbase, for instance, okay, which is not a crypto, but which is an exchange, like, you know, competing with FTX, is not decentralized, but is regulated. The worst risk is with those who claim to be decentralized and which are not, and on top of that, are not regulated. And this is what happened with FTX. They say we are decentralized, they were not. And on top of that, they were not regulated. And that's a recipe for disaster. So I think that's probably one of the main lessons from the FTX disaster, is that you need to choose your camp, you know. If you really want to go into DeFi and then, you know, accept, let's say, loose regulation, you need to make sure that it's truly decentralized. And if you go into something which is centralized, you need to make sure that it's regulated like TradFi, basically. I think that's the kind of trade-off you need to make.
Interesting, super interesting. Fabian, what's your view on the checks and balances and how to make sure you don't get drugged?
Yeah, I think that's an extremely important question. It has, again, a lot to do with risk management, right? And that can go along different dimensions. Similar to what Charles already said, I think there are different part of the ecosystem, be it different kinds of risk, be it Bitcoin, being it layer one, being it layer two, being it the applications on top of it. So the more risk averse you are, the more you should go with established tokens, with established protocols who have a track record, who have never had an issue, be that in terms of scalability, performance, being it in terms of hacks, etc. The more risk appetite you have, the more exploratory you can do your investments. But I think you can always go for certain mitigation factors, right? You mentioned smart contract risks. Nowadays, there are tools to audit those smart contracts. They are you can verify, so to say, what from that point of view, who is open to get an audit and who is not open to that. Again, you can look at the track record, how long has a protocol been around, what has been the history of hacks and so on. So that is one dimension. On the volatility itself, unfortunately, the correlation between the different tokens is still very high. So diversification among different tokens has a limit still, but I think that correlation is coming down. But still, I think diversification is one element. Then, of course, there is a derivative market emerging which might help you protecting downside downside risks or adding other forms of payoff profile. So that is an additional element. And then, of course, I think regulation is a key risk, but there as well, as has been outlined, there is the route of going with the transparent regulated players, be that a Coinbase, being it a Signum, being it other such players, which help you go with the, I would say, the healthy part of the ecosystem. So in that sense, yes, it has a lot to do with risks and the checks and balances need to be managed properly. But there are various ways and various dimensions how one can reduce and mitigate those risks.
Sure. I think, for both of you, on Charles, on your side, you've been in a traditional bank that is starting to explore into crypto. And I think, Fabian, you work with a lot of banks that are thinking about crypto. What are kind of common misconceptions that you faced internally, Charles, Henry, but externally for you, Fabian, and how do you sort of address these? Maybe Charles, Henry.
You know, I think obviously the volatility this year doesn't help.
Yeah,
in terms
exactly.
of, let's say, making it investable. Again, it needs to be understood that, you know, it's a liquid VC. We see some unicorns, by the way, getting, let's say, repriced 70% downwards in just one shot. The only difference is that some cryptos got 70% drawdown, let's say, in various stages. That's the only difference, okay?
Yeah.
But I think among the misconceptions is that it's still seen as, let's say, many a scam or, let's say, you know, currency for the drug dealers, you know, or the bad guys. I think also the other misconception is not, let's say, not looking at digital assets as a very, let's say, long-term way to you know, add something to finance. Again, you know, I'm a big believer in the long run is tokenization effort, which is also why, you know, you should foray as a bank into digital assets, not just for Bitcoin and Ethereum. You know, it needs to be also for tokenization over the long run. So, but that's kind of normal. You know, it's we need technologies. There is always, you know, the pain of adoption. Human being is always very skeptical with let's say new technologies and new products. So it's gonna take some time. You know, I remember with the internet, you know, the first time, you know, you were, you know, showing to your mom or your dad, you know, that they can, you know, buy something with a credit card on the internet. There was a lot of pushback, even more when you were saying that they can, you know, have their bank accounts and buy stocks and bonds on the internet. There was a lot of pushback. So it's normal to have pushbacks, but I think this is also why education is very important. Why regulation is always very important. And also, this is why the traditional world also a role to play, because usually, you know, when you want to get the adoption curve, you know, kind of accelerating, you first need to connect with people in the traditional way, you know, because, you know, if it's, and this is where probably there is a big risk, is that, you know, investors using some, let's say, unregulated, you know, digital wallet platforms and buying crypto. So they have two risks. There's the volatility of the asset class, and so which is the basically the return on assets, and they are not sure to get, let's say, access to these assets, which is the return of assets. So when you have a risk on return assets plus return of assets, that becomes very difficult. So again, this is why I'm a big believer that the digital world has a very strong role to play there.
In creating credibility and a believability around the asset class.
Building a bridge, basically, yeah.
Yeah. And Fabian, where have you faced sort of obstacles in the adoption or bringing people into the adoption of crypto?
I think a key element is really understanding per se. For many, crypto is still equal to Bitcoin, and then they bring the arguments of course the energy consumption, as has been said, money laundering topics, the high volatility and so on, and some argue then on based on half wisdom and not true facts and so on. But I think many still think about crypto and then equalize it to Bitcoin, so to say, forgetting that the space is much more diverse in terms of use cases, in terms of applications, but also in terms of payoff profiles that can be implemented, right? It's not only, so to say, that you can invest into a token and then benefit from market upside or downside, that you can also implement yield strategies with lower market exposure. The VC part, which has been mentioned, is so to say, the mapping of a traditional investment strategy to a new underlying, that is a very interesting use case. So I think misconception and misunderstandings are a key element which still make the adoption, the further adoption a challenge. And here, education, as we do probably with the podcast here, education, training and so on, that helps very much. No?
I think, yeah, bringing education, but I think also, in a way, having education that's simple enough to understand from a perspective of someone who is not necessarily a crypto native, I think there is a bit of a chasm. And crossing that chasm is something that we're slowly, I think, trying to see do in the market. Or you guys are doing this probably as a part of your daily jobs quite a lot. But one of the things that you also think about when you're thinking about exposure to crypto is that there's quite a lot of different ways to do it. So like you said, like in kind of low-hanging fruit is like, yeah, buy a bit of Bitcoin, it's a part of your portfolio, and then you have exposure to crypto. But actually today, there's a lot of quite different products out there. And if you're considering, you know, an asset management strategy for your entire portfolio, how would you personally think about bringing exposure to the mega trend or to a slightly more risk on asset class like crypto? Maybe Charles Henry.
Yeah, I think if you look, for instance, discretionary mandates, so there are some rules, you know, which are set by the ESB. So one way to kind of, let's say, enter into this, let's say, new asset class is, for instance, through fund of hedge funds. That is, hedge funds, they are, let's say, some of them are non-directional, so they can really, let's say, benefit from the high volatility, from some of the, let's say, dislocations and inefficiencies we can see across markets, you know, across products, across, you know, protocols, cryptos. So that's one way, let's say, to get into the asset class and added value from, let's say, you know, managers with traditional backgrounds apply to the crypto. And then, you know, comes other products that, you know, we can find in traditional asset classes. Like, for instance, you know, you go with beta, it would be ETPs, or you can create a basket of your cryptos, you know, inside, you know, the portfolio of the clients. And then, you know, you can kind of size the basket. You know, you can have different thematic baskets. Fabien, you know, mentioned some of the different layers, protocols. So you can also, you know, classify them according to, let's say, market cap size. You know, you can go with, I don't know, maybe with the big guys and then with the smaller guys. So there will be, I think, many products. We can also see structured notes coming, structured products, the capital guarantees. Also the, you know, something Signum has been doing is on the yield farming side. So, you know, it can be yields, it can be capital appreciation, it can be diversification, decorrelation. There are many ways to play it.
Interesting. Fabian, what's your take?
I would maybe differentiate between, so to say, what I see from institutional investors and how I personally think about it. What I see when it comes to institutional investors, that still many think about crypto as an additional asset class, right? How is it different in terms of valuation, risk drivers, and so on to the already established asset classes? And then the implementation is mainly through their alternative quote. So within the alternative quote, how much should I and do I want to invest into crypto? And that's a very fair approach, also given the regulation, especially on the pension fund side, etc. Now, personally, I have a slightly different approach when I think about it, because as I was saying before, I think crypto is not only an asset class, it is more an asset universe. You can create yielding income-oriented strategies similar to fixed income in the traditional space, of course with a totally different risk setup, but from a return perspective. You can go for more for, so to say, the price appreciation risk and reward, similar to equity investment. You can go for the alternatives. That's then also, Charles-Henri, what you said, right? The fund of hedge fund type of investment or the VC part. And the way I, from my portfolio, think about it and to which state I hope the average industry will move to is to really think about how much of my income-oriented part of the portfolio is allocated to corporate bonds, to high-yield bonds, to sovereign bonds, and how much is allocated to the crypto yield part. And then also within the equity investments, right? How much am I exposed to world equity, emerging market equity, small cap equity, and how much do I invest into crypto sectors such as gaming, metaverse, and so on, and then through the full portfolio. So the way I personally think about it is more an integrated part in the existing asset classes. How much exposure do I want to, within those asset classes, give to crypto? And my hope and wish is that the average industry is moving towards that kind of thinking. But that's still a way to go. No.
I think that is the journey that we are all on together at this point. But I see that we are now actually out of time. But it was fantastic to have you both on the show today. And for our listeners, if you have any ideas about different topics we can cover or more questions for our guests today, please write into podcast@signum.com. And gentlemen, again, thank you so much for coming on. And until the next time, I wish you a lovely day.
Thank you.